My name is Susan Gross. I'm here from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And today I'm going to talk about dyslexia of foods in the school cafeteria by 6 to 8 year olds translated into consumption. And these are the results of a cafeteria observation study. I'm here representing our research team from Johns Hopkins, Allison Zucker, Aaron Beal, Sana Lim, Beth Marshall, Mary Catherine Augustin, David Page, and Kristen Murray. And I have no relationships to disclose. So, just begin. The objectives of this part of our study was to assess the concordance between school cafeteria selection and consumption of fruits, vegetables, low-fat dairy, whole grains, lean protein among a select group of kindergarten to second graders students in the New York City public schools. And we also wanted to obtain information about the lunchroom environment and its impact on selection and consumption by these students. So this part of our study was actually part of the baseline cafeteria observation for our evaluation of the New York City Food Bank evaluation of their cookshop program. And their cookshop program, just to give you a little background, is an in-classroom cooking nutrition education intervention designed to promote consumption of My Plate foods or targeted foods, and also to familiarize children with those target foods through the cooking, and it's linked to the cafeteria food served. So this part of the evaluation was to get baseline data on the what students were consuming in the cafeteria. We did cafeteria observations in 10 public elementary schools in the New York City area in three different boroughs of New York City, the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. And we had 274 kindergartner through second grade students observed. So our data collection, just to let you know, for each school it was done during one lunch period. I want you to know that one of the wonderful things about the New York City school system is that everyone has the same menu for the system. So we could choose a menu item and look at the rotating menu and be able to go to each school and observe the same menu for each school. So that made it very nice to be able to have comparable meals at each school. Each school, we had a cafeteria observation checklist for the environment of the cafeteria on the day of observation. And we also observed food selection and food consumption. We used iPad photography to collect data on selection and consumption. And we also, prior to each lunch period, each student was given an ID number, and that ID number was put on their tray, and hopefully they did trade with their neighbor. We found out that kindergartners really liked the idea that, I don't like my number, do you like my number? And they would trade. But and then after they filled their tray on the cafeteria line, a picture would be taken of that tray, and then they were given instructions to go to their places in the cafeteria, consume their meal, and leave their tray and all the waste, and then a picture would be taken of that tray after. And here are a pre-photo and a post-photo, so you can see the card that was put on the tray. And this is pretty typical. It was a we select a menu item that had all of the target foods for the cookshop program. So it had to have a fruit, a vegetable, whole grain, lean protein, and low-fat dairy as part of the menu items offered. And we also had a sample tray that would represent the portion sizes given to each child and the standard menu. And then just for the post tray, you can see for the milk, we had these cups that we could pour the milk out into so we could be able to identify how much milk was actually consumed. And we had a protocol for assessing how much of the food, so we could just analyze the data. For the environmental checklist, we had actually a lot more than these five. I'm going to just talk about these five today. We assessed the environment of the cafeteria. Our basis for this environmental checklist is actually from the CATCH program, that they did a lot of environmental assessment, which is based on the wellness policies that the USDA put out for the school environmental nutrition environment of schools. So we concentrated on the ones for the cafeteria, noise level, seating capacity, supervision of the students, so who actually was in the cafeteria supervising or were with the students, length of the school period, and then this was one that we found was important from other studies was these are 6 to 8 year olds, and they have certain developmental needs when it comes to eating. So if you think about it, around that time, you lose your teeth. And if you're given a whole piece of fruit, like an apple, it's really hard to eat. So if you slice that apple up for a child, they're probably more likely to eat the whole thing as opposed, it might take them a little longer to eat that apple if they don't have all their teeth. In addition, if you're giving a child a whole orange to peel themselves, it's a lot harder to manipulate that orange. And that's just fruit examples. There are examples for vegetables or entrees. So we looked at the ease of eating for this age group for packaging of food. We followed a protocol. Actually, there's been quite a few articles in the literature lately on how to look at digital images of cafeteria food trays and looking at proportions of food to assess consumption that we followed. And just to let you know, for this presentation, food selection was considered, a food was selected if one of the targeted foods was present on the pre-food tray. So our target foods were fruit, vegetable, whole grain, lean protein, and low-fat milk. Food consumption was if a food was selected, so only for those students who had actually selected the food, what percentage of the food was consumed on the post tray. So we went from none, less than half, half to 90%, and then 100% consumed. And then we also have any consumption, so that's from less than 50% to 100% consumed, so that can mean only one bite to 100% consumed. Our group of students ranged in age from 6 to 8, but most of them were around 6 years old. 48% were male, 48% were Hispanic, or identified themselves as Hispanic, African-American, parental education. 50% of the parents had at least some college education. Our participation rates are based on parent response, not on the actual response, the free and reduced rate for the schools, because all of these schools were eligible. At least 55% were free and reduced lunches, so they'd be eligible for the SNAP Ed program, because that was their eligibility to be part of the cook shop program. So these percentages are what the parents actually reported what their children did. Okay, I want to explain this graphic because it's kind of busy. If you look at these bars, they represent all 274 children. Oh, where'd it go? How do I go back? fruit. So this is for fruit selection and consumption. The light green part of the box is for no selection whatsoever. So those are the kids who didn't even take fruit. Then the dark green, yellow, orange, and red boxes represent those kids who selected the fruit and their consumption. So for all the kids, we see that 20% actually ate 100% of their fruit. Another 20% consumed some fruit. But of the kids who did select, you know, of all the kids, there were 18% of the kids who didn't eat the fruit. Now, if you go along, we see that vegetables probably were the least number of kids consuming. And whole grains and low fat were about tied about how many selected and consumed. Lean protein actually had the least number who did not select and the highest number actually consuming. I have to tell you that the New York City schools have the policy of offer versus serve, which means there's 5 items offered. They must select 3. Lean protein is usually part of the entree, so it's most likely to be selected because it's the biggest part of the meal. And then vegetable, so, but I thought it was interesting for the other items. They're about equally likely to be selected by the kids. Just to give you a little easier to process. So there were 160 kids who actually selected fruit. So that means about 58% of the kids selected fruit. About 76% of those kids ate some, anything. So that could mean one bite, but about 3/4 of them ate some. Of the vegetables, we actually had about 66% of them selecting a vegetable, but only half of them ate even a bite. Of the whole grains, again, we had about 60% selecting the whole grains, and about 3/4 of them ate some of it. And then for the low-fat milk, we had only 57% of them selecting it and about 3/4 eating it. And then for the lean protein, we had almost 70% selecting the lean protein, about 3/4 eating some of it. This is where I said, okay, so really, what is going on? Why aren't they, even if they take the food, why aren't they eating it? And these are little kids, so it's like they're probably hungry. This is baseline. So some of these kids have just started school. They're kindergartners, first graders. They may not have been in school before. They may not have had to eat on their own before. They might have been home. Even in the pre-K and Head Start world, there's a lot more supervision going on or help. And so they may be a little more on their own. So how does the environment of the cafeteria actually work on this? So we looked at noise. So this bar chart represents vegetable selection and consumption. And as you can see, when the noise was low, there was a lot more consumption of vegetables going on compared when the noise was high. And noise being high meant that our researchers in the cafeteria had to yell at each other in order to communicate. That was the criteria. This is about seating capacity. So we looked at, was it less than 50% full? Was it 50 to 75% full? Or was it packed, 75 to 76 to 100% full? As you see, it's the middle group who actually had the highest consumption. So they had some elbow room, but it wasn't completely empty and it wasn't completely full. Probably was a little more comfortable to settle down. And a friend of mine said, actually, if you think about it, when the kids try to sit all their friends together and they're squeezed tight, it's really hard to eat. And if they're alone, they're distracted or they're just lonely, because they're the only one at the table, it's harder to eat as well. This one is about supervision. It's not that the teacher ate at the table with the students. It's the teachers ate in the cafeteria with the students. So it meant that the teachers weren't off in another room, but that they actually were in the cafeteria. And in those schools that the teacher's presence was in the cafeteria, the kids consumed a lot more. And then length of lunch period. If you have 30 minutes or more, you have more time to eat. This is another developmental issue. Think about trying to open your milk carton, trying to peel that orange, just having enough time to settle yourself down from getting from the cafeteria line to eating. Is little kids need time to just breathe and get on with it. I know that when my kids were little, it took a lot to settle them down enough to eat. And if they only have 20 minutes, it may not be enough time to get to the point where they have time to consume their food. And finally, the packaging. Now, it looks like they consume more over here, but this is like eating just a little bit and half. We had a big jump in the 100% consumption, and this is for fruit. So this really had to do with the slicing the apples and the slicing oranges into sections versus peeling the oranges. So we see that targeted foods, the majority of who selected the targeted foods, consumption ranged from 50 to 74% for any consumption, but really 100% consumption ranged more from 13 to 30%. And then the environmental factors, I think we need to consider those. I know that it's really important that New York City schools had actually switched over to the healthier USDA guidelines the year that we did this baseline consumption. So they were really trying to meet all of the guidelines. So the healthy foods were being offered. But for these young kids, we need to think about the environment we're putting them into to get them to eat. So we can offer them the healthy foods, but if there's no time, if it's too packed or crowded, if it's too loud and noisy, they may not be able to have what it takes to eat the food. I want to thank my other colleagues at Johns Hopkins, our colleagues at the Columbia University, and also the Food Bank of New York City.